You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
In the nearly 7 years since New Yorker staff writer Jane Mayer wrote about the Koch brothers, the network of secretive wealthy donors has grown much larger. She detailed the increasing political influence of wealthy campaign donors, especially conservative billionaires like the Koch brothers, in her book Dark Money, and now in an article in the March 27th issue of The New Yorker headed "The Reclusive Hedge Fund Tycoon Behind the Trump Presidency," she has examined the views and influence of Robert Mercer. We have a link to it on our show page, and I'm very pleased that it brings Jane Mayer back to our show. Welcome back.
Thanks so much for having me.
Now, who is Robert Mercer? I've only started hearing about him recently, partly as a result of your article. How did he make his money?
He's got a hedge fund that he and one partner run. It's on Long Island in Setauket. And he's actually a math and computer genius who figured out at IBM how to sort of take masses of data and make sense out of them through computer programs he wrote so that he could sort of predict movements in the stock market. And that's what they do with this hedge fund. It's called Renaissance Technologies. It's considered by many different financial write-ups probably the most lucrative and successful hedge fund in the world.
But isn't it an odd partnership? Because James Simons, the other big guy at Renaissance, is a Democrat.
And he was, in fact, the founder of this hedge fund, yeah. And he gives money to, among other people, he gave money to Hillary Clinton. And so, yeah, I mean, Simons has retired and has moved on to philanthropy. He gives a lot of money to autism research. And so Simons handed over the running of the firm to two people, one of whom is Robert Mercer. And Mercer's politics are exactly the opposite of Simons. He's an extreme libertarian who is really quite radical. He's very secretive, gives almost no interviews, and doesn't like to talk to anybody. And so it was very hard to figure out his views, but I finally managed to get people at his firm and people he's worked with over the years to sort of talk about what he believes. And his beliefs are kind of, I mean, to me, they were shocking because they're so far out of the mainstream. Simons is kind of a mainstream Democrat. Many Wall Street firms are run by sort of mainstream Republicans. But what you've got in Bob Mercer is someone who is way, way off on the fringes of politics, yet because of his money, he's been able to really pack a punch.
Hasn't Mercer expressed doubts about the risks of nuclear war and radiation? And didn't he also say that African Americans were better off economically before the civil rights movement?
All of those things are true. This was the kind of reporting that was hard to get. But he had a conversation not long ago with someone in which he said that the civil rights movement was bad for blacks and that they were better off without the Civil Rights Act. It was a big mistake in American history from his point of view. And he subscribes to the scientific views of a very a kind of an eccentric scientist who he supports, who's a man named Arthur Robinson, and he works from his sheep farm in Oregon. And Arthur Robinson doesn't believe that global warming is real, and he's collecting, he's got 14,000 samples of human urine that he's collecting in a refrigerator that this hedge fund manager, Bob Mercer, has paid for, where he's trying to find ways to, fight human aging by going through people's urine and finding early signs of decay or something. And he also is someone who believes that nuclear war is much less bad than most of the world believes, because he argues that, and Bob Mercer argues that when the bombs were dropped on Nagasaki and Hiroshima after in World War II, that while it wiped out all the people under in the bomb blast zone, they argue that actually the nuclear radiation was good for the health of people on the peripheries.
In what way?
they just think that a little bit of radiation is good for your health. I called up the the National Academy of Sciences to try to see if there was anything to support this, and they say there's absolutely no truth in this that they've ever heard of. But at any rate, what you've got is this hedge fund manager who's, you know, he's entitled to his opinions like anybody else, and if he wants to believe strange science that nobody else supports, okay, it's fine. Except for the fact that because he's put so much money into politics, he has been able now to dictate a lot of the policies of the United States, or at least have a seat at the table picking who's running our government. His daughter is Rebecca Mercer, and she sat on Trump's transition team. These were the big money people behind Trump. And they got to pick a lot of the people in the administration and push very hard for their choices. And so their weird positions on things become a problem for everybody in the country because of the power of money at this point.
Rebecca is less reclusive than her father. In fact, she's rather public and outspoken. But I want to get back to Arthur Robinson because I find so many of the people in this story fascinating. He is a PhD biochemist, co-founder with Linus Pauling, what's known as the Linus Pauling Institute. And then more recently, he's run for the House of Representatives against Democrat Peter DeFazio. So how did he go from being a distinguished scientist to a conservative political candidate?
Well, and he was a graduate of Caltech, so clearly he's got to be quite smart in some ways. Actually, he and Linus Pauling, he was a very young man, and Linus Pauling was his sort of, he was a protege, and Linus Pauling was his mentor. They had a major falling out, and it wound up with Arthur Robinson suing Linus Pauling or his institute, and, you know, it was a big bloody legal fight. So that didn't work out, and from that point on, which was quite some time ago, he struck out on his own and kind of founded this very unusual little center called the Oregon Institute for Science and Medicine, and in Cave Junction, Oregon, and it's you know, he's an eccentric, and he puts out a newsletter which he sends to people, and the Mercers became subscribers to his newsletter. He homeschools his six children. He's a devout Christian who calls himself a sort of a Jesus and nothing else Christian. He believes that public schools are, you know, a communist conspiracy. He calls them evil. And he's just, somebody who's way, way out on the political fringes in this country. And he is adored by this family, the Mercers, both the father and the daughter, Rebecca, who's in her 40s, have touted Arthur Robinson's science and have suggested that he puts out a homeschooling curriculum. And Rebecca Mercer homeschools her kids. She lives in Manhattan in the Trump development that's on the Hudson River. She's got six apartments there that she joined into one. I mean, these people are extraordinarily rich. And she's touted the idea of naming this scientist, Arthur Robinson, to be the National Science Advisor. Anyway, you're right. He ran for Congress. He's now run three times and lost each time. And the Mercers supported him through sort of a front group that was a super PAC. And poured money into it. But again, his views were so far out there that he's been defeated.
How did the Mercers and Robinson and the few of the others here compare to some of the other major donors in current politics, conservative politics, like the Kochs? Are they much further to the right?
No, they are quite aligned with the Kochs in many ways. The Kochs also are very, very far right in terms of both of them believe that government should be shrunk down to in a quote in this story, someone said Bob Mercer believes government should be shrunk down to the size of pinhead. That's from a man named David Magerman, who works at Renaissance Technologies and finally spoke out on the record about what Bob Mercer believes. The Kochs are very much, they believe very much the same thing. They grow out of the John Birch Society, the Kochs do. which looked at, it was very much anti-Soviet, anti-communist, and then began to regard the United States government and the New Deal and the Great Society and all the liberal programs as akin to sort of some kind of threat like Soviet communism. And so they look at government as the enemy. And because they're so rich, of course, they don't like paying taxes, and they have a lot of taxes because they make so much money. I mean, Bob Mercer makes, according to Institutional Investor, $135 million a year. The Kochs now are worth each about $45 billion each. So they don't like, and they both make about $1 billion a year, each of the Koch brothers, David and Charles. So they don't like taxes. They don't like regulations on their business because it interferes with their ability to make more money. And they don't need government services. They don't need Social Security. They don't need Medicare. They kind of subscribe to this idea that anybody who needs help from the government, welfare or any kind of aid, even public schools, it damages people's character.
Now, what about when Mercer's beachfront property is threatened by rising seas? Does he think the government should get involved?
Well, you know, he doesn't have to really worry that much about rising seas because he owns a $65 million yacht called the Sea Owl, and it can float no matter how high the sea level is anywhere in the world, and it has its own emergency operating center on it and everything else he needs to function. So, I mean, these people are going to be the last people to be affected by things like climate change. They can always go to higher ground. It's the poor people who are going to be hit. It's the people who can't move. It's the little islands and, you know, in the South Pacific and maybe even parts of Manhattan where people can't move from. You know, it's those people who can't afford to do better that are going to get hurt first.
You mentioned David Magaman, who worked with Mercer at Renaissance. He wrote an op-ed in which he said, Robert Mercer now owns a sizable share of the U.S. presidency. Are the Mercers playing an active role in developing policy?
Well, Bob Mercer, the hedge fund co-manager, first of all, it's very hard to know precisely, since he doesn't give interviews and neither does his daughter. They are way behind the scenes, but his daughter is a bit more talkative. She didn't give me an interview, and she hasn't given any, but she talks to other people at least. And she's been very active. She was on the transition team for Trump. She very much had a big part in telling Trump who to put in place in his campaign when it was really floundering in last August when Trump fired Paul. His campaign
Manafort.
Manager, Manafort. I'm sorry, Paul Manafort, and because of the connections between Manafort and the Ukraine came up, the campaign was really teetering, and at that point, Rebecca Mercer popped up and offered to put a couple million dollars into the Trump campaign, but met with Trump and said, "You need to hire better people, and I've got just the people for you." And at that point, the family put in place political operatives who they had been working with for a couple of years, one of whom was Steve Bannon, who became the campaign chairman.
And didn't Mercer endow Breitbart News with $11 million in 2011?
Yes. Steve Bannon and Mercer ran it together. And Rebecca Mercer is very involved in Breitbart News. According to someone who's an insider there, she pretty much fly-specs the stories, reads everything on Breitbart News, and calls in if she feels that there's a typo or a grammatical error, and also suggests area of coverage that she feels that they may be missing. So, yeah, the family's very wrapped up in Breitbart News. They are the major owners of it, and Bannon, of course, was the executive editor of Breitbart News. So basically what happened was when Trump's campaign was flailing, the Mercers came in with money and put their people in charge. They'd worked with Kellyanne Conway, who had run a super PAC for them, And they had as deputy campaign manager, they put in David Bossi, who runs an organization called Citizens United. And they'd given that organization a ton of money. And so their people kind of surrounded Trump and continued to play a very big part in his surrounding him in his administration, particularly Bannon, of course, who is now Trump's chief strategist, just as he had been for the Mercer family before the election.
I'm speaking with Jane Mayer, whose article, Robert Mercer, Hedge Fund Tycoon Behind Trump, was in the New Yorker in the March 27th issue, and we will continue our conversation after this. We're back with Jane Mayer, author of the bestseller Dark Money. Now she's written an article for the New Yorker in the March 27th issue called The Reclusive Hedge Fund Tycoon Behind the Trump Presidency. We're talking about a man named Robert Mercer. Do we know how much the Mercers have donated altogether?
Well, again, it's hard to know because a lot of the money is very hard to track. But they've given about $22.5 million during 2016 to in declared donations, sort of ones that you can follow, to Republican candidates. And
originally Ted Cruz.
Initially Ted Cruz, that was their first choice, and then when he went down, they moved their support to Trump. Between 2008 and 2016, they have put about $77 million into politics. So they've become very major forces, even though they are so reclusive and secretive. They prefer to kind of work, let their money speak for them, I guess.
David Magaman, in his op-ed piece, said he warned more generally of risks that come with donors treating their contributions as investments. If political contributions are an investment, what returns do the Mercers expect?
I think they expect a return which would mean that the president of the United States, and to the extent that he can put his imprint on policy, will follow their views, put in place policies that they support. And
well, how did that work? Do you know whether they supported the new health care bill?
I think where you can see their impact much more is that since they are among the tiny minority of people at this point in the world who don't believe in global warming, what you see is when someone like Scott Pruitt becomes the head of the EPA, who also doesn't believe that global warming is caused by humans and is really happening, their policy choices are reflected in our government's policies. On health care, I don't know where they would stand. My guess is that, like the Kochs, they prefer to see no health care policy, no government involvement in health care. So that certainly they would be ardent opponents of Obama's health care plan and more like maybe the Freedom Caucus in the House, which wanted to just blow the whole thing up, get rid of it.
Haven't the Kochs worked to bring major conservative donors together? Are the Mercers part of that network?
Yes, they are. What the Kochs did that really, I think, revolutionized money on the right is that they created a club, the Koch Network, and it meets twice a year, and it's by invitation only. And it's now got about 400 or 450 million. Excuse me, 400 or 450 of the most right wing millionaires in the country, and they get together twice a year, and they pool their campaign contributions, and that gives them a lot more power. They've created a very large kitty that they can spend on joint projects.
They vowed to spend $889 million. In the 2016 election cycle. Do we know if they did?
Well, what they were hoping to do, it's interesting how it's turned out. They were hoping in 2016 to be able to pick the presidential candidate on the Republican side and help put him in power. And what they waited until the nominee was chosen in the primary process, and the problem for them was the nominee that the country chose, Donald Trump, was someone who was very much not aligned with their point of view. So they had a real dilemma. They weren't sure whether they should help try to elect him or not, and they decided to step back. And they spent their money instead on congressional races and gubernatorial races across the country.
And did rather well.
They did very well, yeah. I mean, people sort of counted them out because they pulled out of the presidential sweepstakes and sort of figured they were not players. Far, quite the opposite. If you take a close look, they did incredibly well all across the country in races that they supported, right on down to kind of local races. They've gotten involved in kind of the capillaries of American politics. And so they've spent a ton of money, less than the $889 million that they'd set aside. But among those who were working with them for several years were the Mercers. And in one year, in 2014, the Mercers actually put more money into the Koch's project, their political project, than the Kochs did. So they won headlines from Bloomberg saying, you know, that Bob Mercer was the man who out-Koched the Kochs. I mean, these people have a tremendous amount of money, and they are really throwing it around.
The Koch brothers donate widely, including to conservative groups like ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, and the Cato Institute, but also PBS and MIT. How does the pattern of donations by the Mercers compare?
The Mercers have been very strategic since about 2011 or 2012 in the way they've invested in politics. And that there's a reason for that. That's about when they joined forces with Steve Bannon, who is a very bright and astute political operative. He's now Trump's senior advisor in the White House, strategic advisor. And Bannon helped them figure out how they could spend their money for more impact. And the plan was interesting if you go back and look at it. And a lot of what I was trying to figure out was how did they get what they wanted? Because it's even with a lot of money, you don't necessarily get what you want in politics unless you spend it smartly. And so what they did was they put this money, $10 million or so, into Breitbart News. So they created their own media platform for the far right. And they put money into a very mysterious big data company called Cambridge Analytica, which uses social media platforms like Facebook to push messages through people's Facebook accounts. It's kind of it's described by a professor I quote as kind of a propaganda machine. And then they started a new organization called the Government Accountability Institute. And what that does, and they put millions into this, it kind of creates opposition research on their opponents, and in this case, it dug up dirt on the Clintons, and it packages it as news, and it created and drove quite a bit of the narrative during the 2016 campaign that painted a picture of Hillary Clinton as corrupt. It put out a book called Clinton Cash. And that book, which was created by this organization funded by this one hedge fund family, basically, Clinton Cash made its way through stories from it onto the front page of the New York Times and right into the bloodstream of the campaign, and went a long ways towards creating a picture of Hillary Clinton as deeply corrupt.
I'm speaking with Jane Mayer. Her March 27th article in The New Yorker was "The Reclusive Hedge Fund Tycoon Behind the Trump Presidency." This is WMIC, WMIC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Do we know what Mercer thinks of reporters challenging conservative positions? Would he agree with Donald Trump's tweet about the media being the enemy of the people?
Yeah, I think absolutely. In fact, one of the things that I found out while I was working on this story was that phrase describing the press as the enemies of the American people actually came out of, it appears, an advisor that's a pollster and advisor paid for by Bob Mercer. There's a man named Pat Cadell, who used to work as a Democratic pollster, but he's been working as a consultant for Bob Mercer, the conservative hedge fund manager for the last few years. And that's a phrase that Pat Cadell coined, it appears. I think you can pretty much thank Mercer for that point of view and that phrase.
Hasn't Mercer done quite well financially under Democrats? Didn't Bill Clinton eliminate key banking regulations that helped him?
Yes, but of course the Dodd-Frank bill passed during the Obama administration after that, and a lot of these Wall Street people and hedge fund people, they hate the regulations that have been put in place in the Dodd-Frank bill, it's one of the first things they've been gunning for since Trump's been elected.
Didn't Trump attack big money politics during his campaign and also criticize Hillary Clinton for taking money from Goldman Sachs?
Yeah, it's such an irony, isn't it? The language of populism has been Trump's language. I think it was a lot of how he got elected was he very much understood the anger that middle-class people, working people everywhere feel towards elites who they feel plagued by different rules and get ahead unfairly. And Trump was very much the voice of that anger. Yet when he was elected, he has surrounded himself with people like the Mercers, and you take a look at his cabinet, there are a number of people there from Goldman Sachs, and his top economic advisors are, several of them from Goldman Sachs. He surrounded himself with the very people who he attacked while he was campaigning.
In light of what Trump had said about big money and draining the swamp, did the Mercers believe him? Why would they support him at all?
Well, these are great questions, and my sense is that there's there's the language draining the swamp. It's actually murky language in its own right. Who are the swamp creatures? Who are you getting rid of in Washington? That was not really clear to voters. It sounded good, but in the view of people like the Mercers, the elites that they want to get rid of, and the elites who Steve Bannon wants to get rid of, are government regulators. They are the regulations that protect ordinary people. That's who they're gunning for. It turns out not to be the billionaires who are profiting, but rather it's the regulators who are trying to restrain them. I think the language sounded good. The anger was sincere, and I think many voters were drawn to it. But it was unclear who the targets really were.
Given Trump's history and comments, did any of the people like the Mercer say they couldn't support him, at least initially?
You've got the Kochs did not support Trump, mm-hmm. And it was for a slightly different reason. It was because, the split really comes over immigration policy and trade. A number of huge business people who are Republican, they want free trade, and they also want open immigration because open immigration tends to lead to cheaper labor. And free trade means there are no tariffs on their products. And so that works for most big businessmen. And for that reason, the Kochs were against Trump because they didn't like his positions on immigration and trade. And they still don't like those positions. So, for instance, what's coming up soon is tax reform supposedly is going to be an issue that Trump wants to work on. And one of the policies that he has endorsed includes a border tax. The Kochs are very against the border tax, but Trump has proposed it.
Of the 100 biggest individual donors identified by the Center for Responsive Politics, 40, like James Simons and Tom Steyer, gave largely to Democrats, and the money donated by the top 100 is about evenly split between Democrats and Republicans. So why have Democratic donors been so much less effective?
Well, you know, part of the thing that I think the Kochs figured out, and it's why I find them so fascinating, and the Mercers, too, have followed their playbook, is they don't just give money to candidates. That's sort of cheap and easy way to give away your money. What they've done is much more strategic. They have built up nonprofit groups that they've founded or, in some cases, kind of taken over and run. That push their point of view from many, many different directions at once. So the public doesn't really understand, I think, often, that when it hears a message coming from a nonprofit group or a think tank, for instance, putting out a study, or a news organization like Breitbart, which is owned largely by the Mercers, they don't realize that it's the same billionaires. If you peel back the layers of the onion, it's the same money from a few handfuls of people who are funding all of these different organizations, and that's what the Kochs did, and it created a kind of a machine, of private political machine in the country, and that's what the Mercers are trying to do as well.
As Obamacare was faced with being replaced, public support for it surged, and so did support for Medicare, Social Security. What did the Mercers or the Kochs make of public opinions like that?
I think they want to fight public opinion like that. They think that the Kochs have been against Social Security in generations in their family since it was started.
Do they want to privatize it or just eliminate it?
I think ideally they'd like to eliminate it, and the same with Medicaid and Medicare. They don't believe government should play a role like that. They're libertarians. I mean, they really believe in a kind of a Darwinian sink or swim point of view, and so they oppose these kind of programs. I mean, and for that reason, again, they are in a different place from Trump, because one of the things Trump did that I think was smart during his campaign was, unlike all the other Republican candidates for president, he stood up and he said, "I'm for Social Security. I think we need to support it and strengthen it." And middle-class voters heard that, and they know they need Social Security. And he was the only Republican presidential candidate who was saying things like that.
But Paul Ryan has been a critic of Social Security as it's now structured. So is there going to be more tension between him, the two of them?
I think this is going to be one of the great fights. I'm really interested to see whether does Trump stick to his guns and keep supporting middle-class programs like Social Security and Medicare, or does he fold? The big money wants him to fold. Most of these billionaire funders want to privatize all these programs. So we'll see.
Just one more thing, Jane. In the Darwinian state of nature, the Kochs and the Mercers wouldn't have police forces to protect their property. They wouldn't have the U.S. military to defend us against enemies. Would they like to get rid of those things as well?
There is a position that the Kochs have taken that what they support is what they call the watchman state. The only thing they really want is security for their private property. The rest of it, they don't care too much about.
So they don't care if a burglar comes to my home, as long as they can afford to have a watchman for their homes?
Well, no. They may want security for your private property, but basically what they don't care about are protections for all kinds of other things having to do with, you know, the regulations on your food. They wanted to abolish the FDA. They want to abolish the IRS and all taxes. They want to abolish the EPA. They wanted to abolish the Federal Election Commission so rich people can spend anything they want on elections. And there'll be no kind of way to trace it. They pretty much want to get rid of most of the federal government except the part that looks after private property.
Jane Mayer's latest article for The New Yorker in the March 27th issue is The Reclusive Hedge Fund Tycoon Behind the Trump Presidency. Thank you for being on our show again.
So great to be with you. Thanks for having me on.